Da, cu el și după aceea. Te las pe tine și eu mă mut. Trebuie să menționez câteva date despre CV-ul, doamne, că nu am la mine, de așa zic. Părinte Stefan are rost, că se cunosc.
Începe să sună.
Hello, can you hear me?
I'm in here. Hello.
Okay. So, good morning or good afternoon. So, welcome. Yeah. My name is Carmen Socacciu. I'm the coordinator of the committee for the habilitation of Mrs. Crăciun Alexandra. I would like first to welcome you as an international member of the committee. It's Professor Schurgers from University of Maastricht, Netherlands. Thank you for coming with us in this online, but close on the other way. Okay, and beside you in the committee is also Professor Dricu Anica, Professor of Biochemistry from the University of Craiova, Romania, Department of Biochemistry. Myself, I'm also Professor of Biochemistry at the University of Agricultural Sciences and Veterinary Medicine, at the Faculty of Food Science and Technology. So we are three members of this committee, and beside us is also two representatives from the Ministry of Education, namely from the Committee of Diplomas Assessment, is Mrs. Kiritsa. I think you know her by email conversations, and also her colleague from the same ministry. Now, I think I will thank also to the guests of this presentation. They are colleagues from Medical University from Cluj-Napoca, also other colleagues from other universities of Cluj, and some close friends of Alexandra. I will not present in a detailed manner the CV of Alexandra because the committee received previously the whole dossier, and the dossier contains the CV, the list of publications, and it is shown that she fulfilled all requirements, all criteria according to the Romanian legislation, so she was allowed and planned today to have her public presentation because she's fulfilling all previous criteria. I think now I will invite Alexandra to make her presentation, and then after the presentation each member of the committee is asked to have comments, to have questions, suggestions, and so on. So we'll return to you. Of course, you will see her presentation. Okay. Alexandra, and stai bine eu aici.
With your allowance, I think I will sit down so that Professor Sürges can see me as well. So, dear members of the Commission, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to present you briefly the habilitation thesis, actually summarizing my research activity over 18 years. And that was focused on vitamin K role at extrahepatic level. I will mute myself. So before starting the whole story, I must tell you that the story of vitamin K itself has less than 100 years. It was discovered by Danish biochemist Henrik Dam in 1929. And in 43, he received, together with the American scientist Edward Doisy, a Nobel Prize in Medicine for Physiology, first one for discovering vitamin K and Doisy for elucidation of vitamin K structure. Only after several years, in 1974, Stanflo discovered that there are inactive coagulation factors, especially in those anticoagulating animals. They are lacking an unusual amino acid, which is called gamma-carboxyglutamic acid. And in 79, it has been discovered that this gamma-carboxyglutamic acid requires a specific enzyme which is called gamma glutamyl carboxylase. So the story is not that old. And concerning the structural forms of vitamin K, there are three main groups. In nature, we find especially the group of vitamin K1 and menakinons, and the synthetic form menadione. These two forms are very similar, vitamin K1, called as well phylloquinone, has a methyl group, 2-methyl, 1-4 naphthoquinone, which is similar in menakinone group as well, but an isoprenic unit, which is unsaturated. Here are three isoprenic units, and in menakinone, these are saturated. We are calling them, based on the number of the isoprenic units, menakinone 4, 5, depending on the length and number of isoprenic units. Commercially available forms for prevention, for prophylaxis, are mainly synthetic forms, and these are differently distributed in the world. In Europe, mainly, it is commercialized form K1, so phylloquinone, and in Asia, menakinone. Menadione is the synthetic form which is mostly supplemented in animal food. So animal food contains a lot of menadione, and at the beginning it was used for prophylaxis in humans, but it was a setback due to the side effects. Where are the natural sources for vitamin K? Vitamin K1, phylloquinone, it is found in green vegetables, mainly in spinach, kale, cabbage, broccoli, less in vegetable oils, and such as rapeseed, soybean, olive oil. And vitamin K2, menakinones, comes from fermented foods, especially natto. Natto is a special cereal that results after fermentation of soybean. Curd cheese, sauerkraut, so all are resulted after fermentation. And animal products, mainly organs, where vitamin K is stored in the form of menakinones. And of course, vitamin K2 is produced by bacteria, but it's still a matter of debate whether the bioavailability of vitamin K produced in the intestine are of value for vitamin K status. At intestinal level, there are two important enzymes that are involved in formation of vitamin menaquinones, Bacillus subtilis and E. coli. Concerning the vitamin K absorption, transport and storage, there are a few facts that should be mentioned and to be aware of. For the fact that vitamin K is a liposoluble vitamin, it is assimilated together with lipids. So for assimilation of lipids, biosolids are required. They are entering in the form of chylomicrons in the lymph and then entering in circulation in the form of mature chylomicrons that is containing apolipoprotein E. After distribution in different tissues, the remnants, chylomicron remnants, are uptaken by specific receptors for apolipoprotein E. So that is important to know that the uptake of vitamin K may be related to different ApoE genotypes. Another fact is that vitamin K that comes from diet mainly is from K1 or MK4 or MK higher than MK4, 6, 7, 8, which are abundantly in cheese, for example. They are transformed in deposit tissue from K1 to menaquinones or lower menaquinones, MK4, for example, in larger menaquinones, MK6, 7, 8, and so forth, through MK13. What is the function of vitamin K at a tissular level? Vitamin K is a coenzyme. So for her function, she's not acting alone, she's acting together with carboxylase, this enzyme. And this carboxylase is present at the rough endoplasmic reticulum. And she's transforming glutamic residues, this is the structure, in gamma carboxyglutamic acid, so or GLA residues. And for that, vitamin K needs to be reduced, so in the form KH2. This is achieved by the help of another enzyme, NADPH K reductase, which is more present in cytosol. She's more a hydrosoluble enzyme. So finally, the role of vitamin K stands by the transformation of glutamic residues in gamma carboxyglutamic residues of proteins that are containing GLU residues. Which tissue have this enzyme? Most of the tissues, bone especially, blood vessels, pancreas, all tissues, but no carboxylase in brain and tendon was found. So these tissues might be poor in vitamin K status. A special aspect is related to the anticoagulants known as vitamin K antagonists because they block this enzyme, DTOL-KO reductase, known for vitamin K recycling cycle. So after the reaction, vitamin K will be oxidized, and this may be once again used in another reaction if she is reduced back to the reduced form. And this enzyme, DTOL-KO reductase, is blocked by the anticoagulants. Another aspect concerning this enzyme that is reducing vitamin K, NADPH, bones are lacking this enzyme. What are the main proteins dependent on vitamin K status? Most of them are in the liver, and they are known to be involved in blood coagulation. This was not a particular target of my research. I was looking on extrahepatic proteins. But you can observe that the hepatic coagulation factors are very rich in GLA residues. Here are the number of GLA residues per molecule. And the extrahepatic GLA proteins, represented by osteocalcin, which is produced in bone, contains only three residues. Matrix GLA proteins produced by chondrocytes or blood vessels have five GLA residues. Protein S, growth arrest protein 6, and kidney GLA proteins, and even newer GLA proteins such as GLA-rich protein, newly discovered, she has a large number, 10 residues of GLA. They are involved in controlling calcium deposition, because by reaching electronegativity, the molecule, she has high affinity for calcium. As you can see in this figure, vitamin K is taken firstly by the liver. Liver absorbs the main part of circulating vitamin K, and she needs it for activating coagulation factors. But what remains to the extrahepatic tissue may lead to subclinical vitamin K deficiency that we are calling lately insufficiency, not anymore deficiency. We are calling deficiency when we have clinical signs. So what are the proteins involved at this level? Osteocalcin in bone, and in arteries and cartilage, matrix GLA protein. So these are the main facts about introduction on vitamin K, and this is the backbone of rehabilitation thesis, presenting you my whole activity of research in this field, and lately, in the last chapters, the newly achieved results.
Întreabă dacă el vede prezentarea.
Nu cred.
Ah, numai pe tine te vedea. Nu poate vedea care pe slide-urile care trebuie să le vadă.
Professor Shurgas, do you see the presentation? Yeah. Or you just see me?
No, I see both you and the president.
Okay. President of the Commission wanted to know that. So, in chapter 2 of this habilitation thesis, I present comparative studies in rat animal model for vitamin K deficiency. Then in chapter 3, comparison of a number of markers for vitamin K status at extrahepatic level and hepatic level. Chapter 4, potential effects of vitamin K supplementation on bone mass and bone metabolism. In chapter 5, association of vitamin D and K deficiency in unsupplemented children. And in chapter 6, we have evaluated vitamin K-dependent proteins in genetic diseases associated or affecting bone metabolism. In chapter 7, I describe the evaluation of vitamin K dependent proteins in diseases associated with chronic inflammation. So to start with the first one, these are based on two articles published in Biochemia Acta, comparing two deficient models for vitamin K. One is achieved by nutritional deficiency, and the second is achieved by anticoagulants. If in the first one, nutritional vitamin K deficiency model, we have maintained the vitamin K cycle, so one molecule of vitamin K may be used several times, in the second model, the vitamin K cycle is blocked. We have made all these animals K deficient, and we have evaluated the formation of prothrombin and urinary GLA after supplementation with different amounts of vitamin K. In this graph, especially right bottom, is presented the dose administration of menakinon 4, doses of 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10. and prothrombin activity at these dosages of menaquinone. We observed that after 6 microgram per gram food, they will not increase further in prothrombin activity, but they increase further in GLA excretion. So GLA was measured in urine as a free amino acid, so free GLA by HPLC. We have defined in animals vitamin K sufficient status, which is the minimum amount of vitamin K that will not increase further prothrombin time. So, to summarize the studies made in animals, we conclude that is based on urinary free GLA, that there are significant differences in free GLA excretion in nutritional model and anticoagulated model. In nutritional model, the GLA, urinary GLA decreased by 30%, while in anticoagulated model, it decreased to 80%, so it yields 17% of the starting values. In supplementation of vitamin K after 3 days, we have seen an increase in urinary GLA, but more in menaquinones than in vitamin K1. Well, these differences in GLA excretion in deficient model is related to the functionality of vitamin K cycle, and it is presumed that in the anticoagulated model, what remains 17%, for example, or 20% of total urinary GLA may come from bone resorption. Continuing research in seeking for the best marker for vitamin K status, we have chosen extrahepatic bone markers, osteocalcin, because previous studies have shown that deficiency may appear, or subclinical deficiency may appear, even if there are no PIFCAs. PIFCA is a marker that appears, they are protein induced by vitamin K absence, that's the name for it, and appears when there is an insufficient level of vitamin K for carboxylation of coagulation factors. And there are PIFCA2 for prothrombin, PIFCA7 and 9 dependent on the coagulation factors. So in condition having no PIFCA, still we have at extrahepatic level under carboxylation of GLA protein, meaning bone GLA protein, osteocalcin. When I started the studies for extrahepatic bone GLA proteins, there were different tests doing measurement for osteocalcin, even immunoreactive osteocalcin. The sensitivity of the tests were very low. Then ELISA method started, but differences in tests were very much reliable or dependent on the fragments antibodies were recognizing. So there were 40 published osteocalcin assays, of which 27 were commercially available, so of which some of them recognized only N-terminal or C-terminal or N and mid or mid and C-terminal part. And it was important to measure whole molecules, so to avoid the influence of resorption. To better understand how osteocalcin is produced, we have in this figure the osteoblast, so a young bone cell, that produces osteocalcin. And under the action of carboxylation and vitamin K, the molecule will be carboxylated, so she will have three residues. Oh, sorry, this marker is not showing. Three residues of GLA, that are excreted outside of the cell and being in the blood flow, they will have affinity for calcium. So they will bind immediately calcium, and in the bone, well, they will attach to hydroxyapatite. The problem is when vitamin K is not sufficient, or we have an anticoagulation, the GLA residues won't be formed, so non-carboxylated or uncarboxylated osteocalcin will be released in the bloodstream. So this protein lacks GLA residues. After osteocalcin is released in the bloodstream, she stays about 10 minutes. Afterwards, 80% will be taken by the bone for mineralization, and after 10 minutes she will be started to be degraded by proteases, resulting different fragments of osteocalcin. So it is important which method you choose when you wish to measure osteocalcin. Because of interest, when you wish to measure bone metabolism, it is important to use a method that is recognizing whole molecules, so-called de novo synthesized osteocalcin. Here it is shown the structure of osteocalcin with the three GLA residues in position 17, 21 and 24. This is the work of a published article in Clinical Chemistry. We try to develop a test, an automatic test for recognition of whole molecules of osteocalcin, and it was used, there were used two antibodies, one recognizing 1 to 19, and then it is added a big bit, a polystyrene bit, small bit, coated with other antibodies that were recognizing the other part of the molecule. So she was kept like a sandwich, whole molecule of osteocalcin. This detection method is very sensitive, and it has a broad linearity, because when you are also interested to measure, you wish to have a large linearity and reproducibility of the method. So we had a very small coefficient of variation and large linearity. In the next chapter are presented several articles in which we tested supplementation of vitamin K to bone markers and bone metabolism. And before entering in presentation, some facts should be said about. Vitamin K deficiency due to physiological malabsorption is observed in very young subjects or older subjects. For example, postmenopausal women have higher levels of uncarboxylated osteocalcin as well as newborns. And it seems that undercarboxylated osteocalcin is inversely correlated with hip bone mineral density, and subject with increased levels of undercarboxylated osteocalcin has sixfold increased risk hip fracture. So based on that, we have presumed that extrahepatic tissues are vitamin K insufficient. So we have evaluated several groups of subjects that might develop this. In Romania, children without vitamin K supplementation, top sporters, and even in one astronaut during stay in space. So before presenting you the effects of vitamin K on bone, some facts about bone metabolism, or here it is presented the structure of bone, and mention or notice that trabecular bone has a turnover rate of 9%. So that means that in about 9 years we might completely renew trabecular bone, while cortical bone does not have a very high turnover, it's only 2% per year. So bones with high amounts of trabecular bone will be more susceptible for fracture in pathological estates associated with increased resorption. And indeed, postmenopausal women have here at the level of femoral neck frequently lower bone density. Concerning bone metabolism, there are two main important processes during life. One is bone modeling, that refers to development of bone till the maximum bone peak is achieved and the final shape of bone. But bone remodeling is a process that is active the whole life and is responsible for the continuous renewal of bone, and it is achieved by two types of cells, osteoclasts responsible for bone resorption and osteoblasts for bone formation. A complete remodeling cycle takes about 6 months. Therefore, an effect of treatment is good to be seen in 6 months, but some markers are showing that even after 1 or 3 months that this can be seen. And here it is summarized, the markers for bone formation. I will come soon to them. The factors that are influencing bone turnover are hormonal factors, local factors, concentration of calcium and phosphate level, and important as well, mechanical stress. And here enters gravity as well. Presenting the cytokines that may influence bone activity and bone metabolism. They are acting on osteoclasts. They are stimulators of osteoclasts and inhibitory on osteoclasts. The bone peak mass is achieved around 35 years, and after a period that, well, it is not much change, it will start to decrease bone mass after 45-50 years, both in females and in males. Of course, it is very much dependent on the genetic inheritance. It is clear that what we can improve, it's only by 30%. As a group of researchers for Cambridge show that genetic is playing about 70% of the incidence in osteoporosis. Then vitamin D status, vitamin K, vitamin C as well, because it's involved in collagen synthesis, but it's not anymore that crucial since vitamin C is supplemented in our food massively. And other risk factors. Among other risk factors, we have another contribution presented in a congress. For example, in postmenopausal women with osteoporosis, ApoE genotype E4 present in osteoporotic women led to decreased bone mass density more than in other osteoporotic women but having ApoE genotype 2 and 3. As markers that we have studied, of course, osteocalcin as a marker for bone formation, bone alkaline phosphatase and collagen type 1, which are markers for bone formation, and bone resorption markers are urinary calcium, of course, but that has more historical value. Even in animals, if you want to make animal deficient of calcium, it must pass about 2 weeks till you see something in calcium, urinary calcium, that has decreased. So it is a lot of influence from other factors. Urinary hydroxyproline may be influenced by diet, for example, a bouillon soup. And sea or antelope peptide of collagen type 1 that may be measured in urine and serum is a good marker, but the marker measured in urine will lead to higher variations. As well, pyridinoline and oxypyridinoline measured in urine. And the latest, beta cross labs, there are cross links from the C-terminal fragment of collagen type 1. It is known that in bones we have collagen type 1, while in cartilages we have collagen type 2. So in a first study with vitamin K supplementation on bone metabolism in top sporters were chosen 8 marathon runners from Benelux, and here in this graph you have the characteristics of these top sporters. You know that they are having a very strenuous effort, and due to that the level of cholesterol decreases, leading to decreased level of estrogen. Some of them were amenorrheic and were not using oral contraception, and 4 of them were using oral contraception for more than 4 years. And the markers that we have explored, bone formation and bone resorption markers, are figured in this graph. In blue, you can see the bone formation, bone alkaline phosphatase, PTH, calcium, hydroxyproline, deoxypyridinoline, so bone resorption markers of unsupplemented oral contraception. And in green, the markers of ladies that received oral contraception, of course, based on hormonal supplementation. And as you see, in all, they have decreased bone markers by 30 to 40%, and that was in accordance with another study of Garnero by that time, that has evaluated in about 680 women in France using oral contraception more than 6 years will have an influence on bone turnover, meaning that bone turnover will slow down. It doesn't mean that you have better bones. It is that bone formation and bone resorption is occurring slower. The effect of vitamin K supplementation, they took 10 milligrams per day for 1 month. And the effect you can see in 4 sporters, no estrogen supplements, and in those receiving estrogen contraceptive, the effects were very low. So the effects on bone metabolism was better seen in amenorrheic top sporters with no oral contraception, and that was in favor of bone formation, because we have calculated a Z-score for bone formation and bone resorption markers, and we see that the netto effect was positive. Well, as I said, the balance between bone formation and bone resorption is achieved by the phenomenon of coupling. So, and the bone, it is not yet known how the bones know precisely to replace the resorbed bone, and how to put the same amount and in the right place, no more, no less. And it seems that this coupling phenomenon is maintained due to cytokines, but also on mechanical stress. And here it was an example of on changing bone markers due to lack of gravity. In a project that I was involved as well for Euromir 95, three astronauts were participating in this, but only one was supplemented with vitamin K. The mission lasted from September till February. And here in this graph you can see the values before flight, during the flight and post-flight. Here is for osteocalcin. And as you see, after taking vitamin K, osteocalcin increased. And here the calcium loss as a marker for bone resorption during the flight before vitamin K was high, but after vitamin K it has decreased. As well, measuring urinary GLA as an effect of carboxylation, it has resulted more free GLA after vitamin K administration. And here we have another marker, PTH, that decreased during the flight. So due to the lack of gravity, bone started to resorb and calcium increased, and calcium, it is known, the ionic form has a direct effect on PTH. So in this experiment, microgravity induced substantial increases in markers for bone resorption, because in fact, although we wish very much to fly, the main danger is the bone health. And the animal studies all have shown that the loss of bone can even go to 30-40%. And this is the fact why leads the astronauts to do physical activity during their stay in space. So microgravity-induced substantial increases in marker for bone resorption and urinary calcium excretion, and a decrease in serum PTH. So vitamin K administration coincided with a change in bone markers, consisted with an improvement of bone balance by decreasing urinary calcium. So carboxylated osteocalcin kept calcium in bones. In Romania, I have evaluated vitamin K status in children between 4 and 48 months old, and taking into account that vitamin K is a liposoluble vitamin, of course we have looked for parallel or associated vitamin D deficiency among these children. So here are the reports over 1 year in one medical pediatric clinic. So the highest incidence of vitamin D deficiency, so rickets, that's with triangles, is between February and March, and it starts to increase November, December. But for vitamin K deficiency bleeding, that was taken from registers over 12 years from gynecologic clinic number one in Cluj. The highest numbers were as well during the cold seasons. So they are in parallel or together. What we have evaluated in these small children was hydroxyvitamin D3 and free GLA. And we have expressed the concentration of free GLA in urine per creatinine for correction for the volume. As children were entering in the study in January, they were divided in two subgroups. One was evaluated in March and one in April. And we have seen that in that it has been decreased in vitamin D levels and urinary GLA as a marker for vitamin K status in both groups. Also, remarkably very low glycemic excretion was observed in vitamin D deficient patients, and in rickets patients characterized by high bone turnover, urinary GLA was not decreased. Further interest was on diseases, especially genetic diseases, that are associating, are affecting bone metabolism. And we have searched for this vitamin K dependent protein, such as osteocalcin. We have measured in Gaucher patients, because in Cluj we have a center for evaluation of Gaucher patients. They are coming every year for control, so it was easy to have many cases from the whole country. So we have evaluated bone formation and bone resorption markers in these patients. It is known that this disease is desarrhythmosis. It affects bone, and we have searched whether bone markers may reflect changes in bone metabolism. And indeed, in graph A you can observe differences. These open circles are normal subjects, but closed or black dots are representing here patients with Gaucher. So formation and resorption as well are affected in Gaucher disease patients. We have further investigated whether osteocalcin carboxylation was affected, and at that time we had this marker, hydroxyapatite binding capacity, which is a ratio between carboxylated osteocalcin and total osteocalcin in percentage, and reflects the capacity of binding of osteocalcin to hydroxyapatite. And we have presented this outcome in Japan to a Congress of Clinical Chemistry and Laboratory Medicine, receiving as well an award to this Congress. We have shown that in patients with Gaucher type 1, hydroxyapatite binding capacity was significantly lower in comparison with the control group. If in the control group the levels were around 60, maximum 60%, so also our controls were quite deficient, in Gaucher type 1 they were decreasing till 37-39%, which is significantly lower. In these patients we have evaluated as well bone mass density to different levels of femur. It is made by dual X-rays absorptiometry, so with DEXA, and we have measured this bone density, but in correlation with ApoE genotype. And we have observed that Gaucher patients with ApoE genotype 4 have lower bone mass density to all levels, so to the spine, neck, quad, and trochanter. Here is the lumbar spine, and here neck, quad, and trochanter are localized to femur. A later interest was after 2007 regarding vitamin K dependent proteins and diseases associated with inflammation. And we had a workshop in 2007 with this item, and resulted several grants that are still running, and I cannot present you all the results because they are yet under revision. But this year we had one publication in that I will present you later. So MGP is a protein produced by vessels, endothelium in blood vessels, arteries mainly, in veins maybe. There are not many articles on that. And in chondrocytes. This is the structure of MGP. As you see, it has five GLA residues, and it seems that these residues are in all population, 70 to 80% of population, under carboxylated. They are not all of them carboxylated. It has been found that vascular vitamin K insufficiency is common in cardiovascular disease. From 2007, in an article published by Vermeer. And high circulating levels of uncarboxylated is a strong risk factor for vascular calcification. It was in 2008 by Professor Schurgers. And starting with that, a number of studies have been made on supplementation with menakinons in cardiovascular diseases, showing that high amounts of menakinons will decrease cardiovascular risk with each 10 milligram per day. So if you take 10 milligram of menakinons, you will decrease to 9%. If you take 20, so till 45, you decrease by 50% the cardiovascular diseases. So that is the Rotterdam study published in 24. So one of our last publication from this year appeared in Clinical Chemistry and Laboratory Medicine was to evaluate for the first time, in fact, in synovial liquid the presence of uncarboxylated MGP, and we have compared the levels in serum and in synovial liquid in arthritis patients. We made a ratio between the synovial concentration and the serum one, and we have seen that there are different significant differences between non-inflammatory and inflammatory patients. So increased MGP was associated with inflammatory patients. So in conclusion, there are subclinical vitamin K deficiency of other tissues than liver common among healthy population. Osteocalcin under carboxylation is present in 70% of population. Uncarboxylated MGP as well is present in 80% of population. So vitamin K insufficiency at extrahepatic level results in uncarboxylation of GLA proteins. And based on that, we should recalculate the recommended daily allowance, which was calculated in 86 based on also on recommendation, which were 1 microgram per kilogram body weight per day, for preventing hemorrhagic disease. So for having carboxylation of liver coagulation factors. So this value should be re-evaluated based on undercarboxylated extrahepatic markers. Another part of rehabilitation thesis was my proposals in scientific and academic development. Briefly, for scientific development, we have proposed this year some grants, and we are waiting for the outcome, proposing to evaluate extrahepatic GLA proteins in cardiovascular diseases and associated with tissular calcification, and as well in oncology. focusing on tumors, breast tumors, prostate tumor, and kidney tumors, to evaluate which fractions, carboxylated, uncarboxylated fractions are present in these states, and of course the vitamin K status. As well, we are in another project thinking to evaluate in healthy population based on some genetic markers such as apolipoprotein E and the evaluation of urinary GLA as a marker for turnover of all GLA proteins in our body. And as well, together with that, to evaluate in healthy population what means bone and extrahepatic, such as vascular, vitamin K dependent proteins, the normal range, and the healthy interval. So for scientific development, we have many plans, depends of course of the successful of the submitted projects. And besides that, we have as well in plan some academic development. One of crucial importance will have will be establishing networks with important scientists with visibility. So researchers that are having similar researches with ours, but with publications in EC journals. In this way, we can summarize or to add together the forces for common publications. And I was astonished that even in our university, we don't know each other. Research outcomes and possibility of collaborations. So I would suggest either to university level or in our department for a master degree, a student that can accumulate by simple internet information a database with significant researchers in the field we are interested in. As well, for international groups, and I really hope that together maybe with Professor Schurgers we shall have final and common projects in the future. And of course doctoral trainings, postgraduate trainings proportioned with healthcare policies. We know that in the present our finance mainly on cardiovascular and cancer aspects, and of course in brain diseases such as Alzheimer or dementia or autism. Indeed, there are some studies even in vitamin K status in these diseases. We are very much interested. So as well, the results of these researches may be presented in workshops, and of course in presentation for general audience such as physicians, doctors that are also interested for continuous medical education. I thank you very much for your patience, and I am waiting gladly for the questions.
Thank you very much, Alexandra. Now, I would like to invite Professor Schurgers for some questions, comments regarding the habilitation content as well on the presentation of Alexandra.
Dear Dr. Kosun, first of all, congratulations on your fantastic habilitation thesis and this wonderful and very clear presentation you made. But of course, I'm not asked only to give you all the credits, but also to question and to discuss with you some of the K research. Can you hear me loud and clear?
Yes. Do you hear me?
Okay. Yes, I hear you.
Okay.
Okay. I want to go with you to chapter 7.
Yes.
For the patients in which you measured the matrix lab protein. Maybe this is not a surprise for you that I want to ask you a question about MGP. What you did is that you showed that undercarboxylated matrix lab protein levels were higher in blood compared to synovial fluid.
Yes.
And as you know, MGP is produced by the chondrocytes, so in the bone, in the cartilage, but also in the vessel wall. So maybe what you measure or what you relate to the cartilage may be reflected by the vascular disease as well. Because if you have chronic inflammation, this also affects the endothelium of the vasculature and may be a confounder in what you find. So my first question to that is, did you check for the for any underlying cardiovascular disease in these patients with osteoarthritis? And the second question related to this is, why did you choose for matrix lab protein? Because if you screen the literature and you relate MGP to osteoarthritis, you find 8 publications. Whereas osteocalcin, the other filamentary-dependent protein, which you investigated intensively, has more than 150 publications related to osteoarthritis. So, can you comment on these two questions?
Yes. So, in the study with the osteoarthritis patients, it was a pilot study. We had 39 patients with present inflammation, and the rest were not having inflammation. So, we looked only at vascular, so in serum. And because they had inflammatory osteoarthritis, so a presence of synovial liquid, we have looked whether MGP may be found in synovial liquid. And indeed, the level was very low. Maybe by inflammation, it was released by chondrocytes or by vasodilatation due to the presence of inflammation. And MGP arrived in the synovial liquid, and in patients with inflammation, it decreased in serum. We made a ratio between the levels in synovial and in serum to see whether there are significant difference between inflammatory and non-inflammatory. We had even a comment from the reviewer asking us whether we can consider this marker as an acute phase reaction protein. And some other authors have seen that MGP is increased in inflammation. And we know that inflammation is in present in atherosclerosis. It is atherosclerosis is not anymore considered only a dyslipidemia, but is associated with inflammation. At that time we didn't spare serum for further measurements of cytokines. The only marker that we had, it was erythrocyte sedimentation rate. And in inflammatory patients, we have found that MGP was increased. It was the uncarboxylated form provided by VTAC company. It is not commercialized yet on the market. What we have found further in a study that is now under review and it's submitted for a publication, in postmenopausal women with diabetes and atherosclerosis with inflammation, we have found total MGP increased. It is the Chinese test kit in which they don't present what is in it and which antibodies are used. And I know your study that has compared the specificity of uncarboxylated MGP with the total MGP. And we can say that for the cases that we had, so the postmenopausal women with atherosclerosis and diabetes, the specificity of the test for this disease, I mean MGP total, was about 70%. Yeah, so it's not that much. So it should be compared maybe with desphospho undercarboxylated MGP or uncarboxylated MGP.
Yes.
Okay. The second question, did I answer it?
Why did you measure MGP and not, for example, also osteocalcin?
Yes, because in inflammation, I suppose that endothelial will react better than bone. And that was one target, because as I said, our interest later, after 2007, was to focus on diseases associated with inflammation, so to target more on MGP. Our studies in bone were performed with the test kits available at that time when they were performed. Indeed, newer kits have appeared lately, so I mean Takara, yes, but they were not available at that time when we were measuring. So we are hoping for the new grants, so to compare bone extrahepatic, so bone osteocalcin and MGP in different forms, so carboxylated and uncarboxylated, yeah, and as well with urinary GLA, and that remains to be seen in a further grant.
I think if you maybe in the future also take osteocalcin or any other small protein into account, you can maybe better compare the blood or the circulating MGP concentration versus the synovial. Because what you would expect is that this is a balance and that these levels would be more or less equal. But what you find, and this is very interesting, is that the ratio is different in osteoarthritis, meaning that in synovial fluid you have less MGP. And maybe this is reflected by reading the cartilage and not by other tissues.
Of course, and in synovial will come MGP from chondrocytes. MGP is produced by chondrocytes and vessel. Why should I measure osteocalcin in synovial?
Well, because then if osteocalcin is, for example, in the circulation, it will also maybe go to the synovial fluid, where you have then a balance between the circulating and synovial amount of osteocalcin. And if you can exclude that, then you can relate that indeed your lower MGP in synovial fluid is caused by the tissue,
okay,
and not by other tissues like, for example, the vasculature.
Okay, so what you mean is to differentiate whether the production is from chondrocytes and if MGP is not coming from vasodilatation due to inflammation in the synovial. Okay, it's a good idea.
Okay. Can I ask another question?
Yes, of course.
Yes. I think all the vitamin K researchers in the world agree that all the vitamin K dependent proteins need to be carboxylated and to be fully active.
Yes.
And last year there was a very stunning publication by a group in the United States, by the group of Gerard Cassenti, who also made the osteocalcin and the MGP knockouts. And what they found is that the undercarboxylated osteocalcin plays a function as an active hormone. So it was specifically the undercarboxylated osteocalcin. And of course the question then raises, is it wise to supplement everybody with vitamin K? And related to that, is there, for example, a difference in the supplementation of vitamin K in Romania versus, well, let's say, the Netherlands? And should we supplement everybody? You as a medical doctor, what would you advise me, for example?
So, to take vitamin K to decrease in weight.
I become fat.
Well, there are studies showing that undercarboxylated osteocalcin is acting on glucose regulation by increasing the number of cells that are producing insulin and stimulating adiponectin. It's true. I don't have much experience on that, but I know that it has been done a study in which supplementing with vitamin K did not reverse glucose metabolism. So it should be more performed, more research is performed in this line. And well, what can I say? Well, all the parameters, insulin, adiponectin, other cytokines should be taken in account. Yeah.
I agree with you that we should not just only go on this one single publication in mice.
And it is a matter of debate as well which form of vitamin K, because as I said, vitamin K1 is uptaken in the liver, and it seems that blood vessels and bone will receive the form after transformation in liver, so menakinons. And maybe it is more beneficial for bone or vascular MGP supplementation with MK4. Maybe if we take the form from Nato Pharma, we shall see a change. Menakinon 7, but remains to be seen in further research.
I think we need a lot of more research, and maybe as you suggested already, maybe we can set up some kind of collaboration in the near future.
Yes.
Dr. Kachun, a final question. How is it in Romania with oral anticoagulation? Because in the Netherlands at this moment it's a big debate that should we even give patients on oral anticoagulation extra vitamin K to increase stability of the INR, and maybe if you get the right form, then it goes, like you say, to extracurricular issues, decrease calcification or bone loss, and on top of that, still can anticoagulate patients. Is there any debate in Romania about this, and what is the frequency, for example, to give patients warfarin?
Yeah. Well, in Romania, I think doctors cannot distinguish yet between different K vitamins and their effect. While in other countries, there are well-known studies showing that in a study with 380 women on 3 years on 1,000 time overdose of vitamin K did not increase any markers for thrombosis. And this was performed even with the latest markers that are showing a risk for thrombosis. So in healthy subjects, there is no side effects, meaning in thrombosis, if you supplement with vitamin K. But indeed, it is the question if the patient takes an anticoagulant drug, will reverse vitamin K the effect on anticoagulant of the anticoagulant, and this it is safe, presented by studies in Holland, by taking till 45 milligram menakinon 4 will have no effect on anticoagulant, but if the patient needs to take more, for example, to reverse some calcification due to warfarin, this should be maybe carefully made and only under medical supervision. Animal studies indeed have shown that calcifications due to warfarin treatment can be reversed by vitamin K supplementation and especially menakinons. Yeah? But I cannot answer you how it is, especially we deal with problems in advising doctors which are the side effects, because patients are not taking only one anticoagulant, they associate with anti-inflammatory drugs, with even natural products like ginkgo biloba, yeah. And these are increasingly, sometimes dramatically, ENR, and patients are under hemorrhagic risk, and they don't even know what they took because they are not sufficiently well aware by doctors what they should not associate. So if we complicate more with vitamin K, but indeed it's a matter of education, and this is our task as well. And we should inform doctors that supplementation till 45 milligrams with menaquinones. Well, I don't know if on the market in Romania you can find menaquinones. I have seriously doubts on that. Will not interfere.
Yeah. So I think there is no area of research which we can dive into. First of all, vitamin K deficiency in patient populations, and maybe the need for vitamin K supplementation.
Yeah.
Well, I thank you very much, Dr. Krasun, for these answers. I'm very satisfied, so I give the word back to the panel member.
Okay. Thank you so much. Now I will pass the microphone to the other member of the commission, to Mrs. Dricu. Perhaps she has also other questions.
Yeah. Thank you very much. First, I would like to say that we appreciate very much your work, Alexandra.
Can you hear?
I can hear you.
Yeah. Okay. but in your work,
yes,
you share that there are several factors which influence vitamin K function, availability, and amount in the body. Why did you choose propose a redefinition of vitamin K, RDA, related to GLA protein metabolism?
You mean GLA, urinary GLA, in fact reflects the turnover of all GLA proteins in our body. Since all the tissues have carboxylase, it is to be expected that many tissues produce GLA proteins. We don't know them all. We know only the function of bone GLA proteins, of vascular GLA proteins, and of course, which is very known now, coagulation factors. But they are not. It is not sufficiently known about the dose of vitamin K that we need to have all vitamin K-dependent proteins sufficient carboxylated. Because as I said, for coagulation, liver takes most of vitamin K, and all the rest of tissues remain potentially insufficient. So it has been seen that osteoporotic women are having uncarboxylated osteocalcin. In all cardiovascular diseases, insufficiency, calcification, name it, you see uncarboxylated MGP. And even administrating menaquinone 7 or menaquinone 4 will decrease the risk for cardiovascular disease. So it is hoping that with a good vitamin K status, we can avoid all these problems. So the proposal to judge whether you are sufficient or insufficient for vitamin K would be a marker that reflects the status after you have carboxylated. So urinary GLA maybe is this marker, and if we succeed to have a method, an easy dipstick for example in urine, that can simply tell you are sufficient or insufficient for vitamin K would be great. So not all the time to eat a lot of cheese. It is studies are showing that if you eat per day fermented cheese, so curd cheese or about 100 gram, then you have plenty of vitamin K sufficient for preventing cardiovascular diseases. But children that are growing from birth till 1 year, you know that they are born with 50 centimeters and in 1 year they reach 1 meter. Is that as in next year we are 3.5 meters. So the rate of bone turnover is very high, the need for vitamin K is much more higher. So in this context, of course, the requirements for children are much more higher. And unfortunately, in Romania, we don't have even pharmaceutical preparations for preventing bone correct mineralization, but even late form of hemorrhagic disease of newborn, which is called this vitamin K deficiency bleeding of newborn. Western studies are recommending till 8 weeks supplementation with oral form of vitamin K. What we have on the market is only the 10 milligram form, which is in an ampoule, and this is used mainly for hemorrhagic accidents. It's not suited for prophylaxis.
But what do you think about the anticoagulant in the food, for example, coumarins?
Yes.
Because from the literature, we know that the RDA value for coumarins increased drastically in the last years. For example, in addition to food, the cosmetic drugs, the cosmetic products are very important sources for coumarins. And maybe this increase in coumarins, in coumarin intake daily, it's a very important factor for deficiency in the vitamin K.
Yes, it might be, and therefore we should supplement more.
Yeah. One more question, if time is available.
Yes.
In your development plan,
yes,
you want to check the vitamin K as an anti-cancer drug.
Yes.
We know that coumarins are also used in cancer therapy, which is an...
counteract.
Exactly. How can you explain that?
Well, the explanation is obvious. So anticoagulants are given for preventing thrombosis in cancer. Yeah? And vitamin K is administered to prevent cancer. Well, I cannot say that for sure. There are some studies in Germany showing that prostate cancer, lung cancer, the risk for that cancer diminished. Even studies in cells have shown that vitamin K is acting on cell on the level of apoptosis. Yeah? So, of course, people are thinking just take K and cure your cancer, but it's not like that. Maybe it can delay the appearance of malignant form associated with calcification. We know that some tumors associated with calcification, they have a high risk for malignancy. So we intend to focus on these kind of tumors, especially in breast cancer, which is very frequent, and calcifications of benign or tumoral or malignant aspect. And we can look at level of carboxylation. Are they undercarboxylated or carboxylated? The proteins involved in tissular calcification, you know that MGP, osteocalcin, petuin, for example, are strongly inhibitors for calcification.
So you mean the treatment should be personalized?
Yes. Or at least to see whether we have a deficiency of vitamin K in these tumors will be helpful enough.
Yeah, that's good.
Yes.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, so finally I have also a question, but it will be a short one. So I saw that you had two models, in vivo models, using animals, rats or mice.
Rats.
Louis star. Deficient on vitamin K. Why and how do you explain that the active prothrombin generation was different depending on the different vitamins you used?
The two models are different fundamentally, because in the nutritional one you have the vitamin K cycle active, and in the anticoagulant model it's not operational, so vitamin K will pass only once. Indeed, why do we have differences? Because the single enzyme present in the anticoagulated model is the enzyme which is more present in the cytosol. NADPH reductase is present in the cytosol, but carboxylase is present in rough endoticulum, mm-hmm. endoplasmic reticulum. And therefore, MK9, MK4 being more lipophilic, they will not enter in this. So in the nutritional deficient model, supplementing with different forms of vitamins, we have seen a high response in prothrombin activity due to more cycles of vitamin K of lipophilic vitamins. So MK4, MK9, they generate, they are recycled more times than K1. In the anticoagulated form, so the C cycle is not operational, we have only the path present in the cytosol, so only K1, MK4 and MK9, which we're studying, had a similar effect. So, mm-hmm. due to the affinity it's more hydrosoluble K1 than menakinone.
So solubility is very important factor.
Yes. For that enzyme which is operational only in anticoagulated model.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I would like also to thank you and to mention that your presentation was very systematic, and we could see in each chapter your specific publications and your specific experimental work. Yeah, I think it was a good presentation. Perhaps my colleagues agree with this. Okay, now I would like to ask also people from audience if they would like to have questions or comments. No? Okay. So I think obeying the rule now, I will ask the people from the audience for some minutes to leave us, because the commission needs to agree on the report. So please be patient 2 minutes, and then I return to you to discuss on the report. Și cum să vi-l trimit ăsta? N-ar semna? Și ăsta cum îl trimite? Numai în engleză?
Nu, îl trimit eu și în engleză și în engleză să-l instaleze după ce ajung în engleză.
Aha. Deci ăsta, iar ăsta să-l trimită el înainte.
Îl trimite scanat.
Îl trimite scanat.
Să vi-l trimite scanat. Ok. Acum îl putem să conversăm și...
Putem să stăm.
Da.
Numai...
Bine. Bun. Deci aș dori, în urma discuțiilor pe care le-am avut cu expertul internațional din comisie, de fapt nu mai vorbesc în limba engleză pentru că dânsul nu trebuia să nu întrerup, dar
nu.
A agreat ideea complet cu ce am discutat noi și mai ales că i-am spus că transmitem în limba română și a fost de acord. Deci am discutat împreună referitor la punctele tare ale tezei de abilitare pentru a fi menționate aici și au fost identificate 3 puncte tari și importante. Primul se referă la structura complexă a tezei de abilitare cu un alt nivel științific al datelor prezentate. Al doilea aspect au fost răspunsurile clare și foarte bine documentate la întrebările care au fost adresate de comisie. Și al treilea punct, faptul că candidata a avut contribuții deosebite la dezvoltarea cunoașterii în acest domeniu în România, pentru că el a apreciat acest lucru, îndeosebi el că aceste studii care au fost prezentate aici vor avea și au un aport deosebit pentru domeniul biomedical în România. Nu a identificat puncte slabe dânsul, are doar o sugestie ca implicarea în domeniul acesta în proiecte internaționale ar fi foarte de dorit, pentru că în felul acesta ar fi integrată și cercetarea din România în domeniul acesta al implicațiilor vitaminei K în grupuri sau în rețele internaționale cu aceleași interese științifice. Deci este ca o sugestie.
Ca o sugestie.
Nu știu dacă să opunem la puncte slabe sau nu. Da, cum credeți?
Am și scris ca și de internațional, numai de România.
Da.
Network-uri.
O să scriem că nu au fost identificate puncte slabe.
Putem da, să o punem doar cu această condiție, da. Să scriem că nu sunt
din sugestia expertului internațional sau recomandarea lui, așa a fost. Deci rezultatele votului au fost 3 pentru toată comisia, pentru și trebuie menționat aici, comisia în unanimitate este de acord cu acordarea, care este termenul? Acordarea abilitării? Acordarea certificatului de abilitare. Deci aceasta este concluzia și noi te felicităm și ne bucurăm că totul a decurs foarte bine
până la urmă.
Și prezentarea și discuția cu dânsul și au fost agreate și discuțiile legate de punctele tari ale tezei și inclusiv ale prezentării. Cu asta dorim succes și altor candidați din sală.
Mulțumesc!
Dacă sunt. Și sunt.
Încedată.
Și sunt. Bun.
7, 8,
deci cum să stăm aici?